According to Woj, the NBA is coming back with 22 teams, which means the Charlotte Hornets season is finished. We'll get to that in a bit, but let's start with college basketball, because this is something I've been working on over the last few days, and it started with the central question. What is the greatest era of ACC Big Four history? Or to put it another way, what time period were Duke, North Carolina, Wake Forest, and NC State all great at the same time? Because after crunching the numbers here, Robert, I feel pretty comfortable with an answer, and it's actually more recent than you might think. The 2004 and 2005 seasons represent the greatest era in ACC Big Four history, and I have numbers to back this up. Since the NCAA tournament expanded to 64 teams in 1985, only three times have all four teams made it to the NCAA tournament in the same year. 1991, Wake Forest with Rodney Rogers, NC State, Corciani, Monroe, really strong Wolfpack team at that time. Duke, a national title contender, North Carolina making it to the Final Four. All of them are very good. And then you have the only time ever NC State, Wake Forest, Duke, and North Carolina all made the NCAA tournament in back-to-back seasons, 2004 and 2005. It also should be noted that all the teams made it to the semifinals of the ACC tournament in 2003. So this really was a strong three-year stretch, but really 04-05, it's the sweet spot. It's the only time that all these schools were legitimate contenders to win a national title in the same stretch. North Carolina actually won it in 05. Duke probably had the most talent out of the four. J.J. Redick, Sheldon Williams, Chris Duhon, just talent across the board. They went to the Final Four in 04. NC State, second round, Sweet 16 team. It still reverberates in my memory. Julius Hodge beating UConn in the tournament, going to the camera and doing the Wolfpack sign with his hand. And then Wake Forest, while they were disappointing in the tournament, number one at the nation at one point, they were number one in the nation at the end of the year in offensive efficiency. They had the best point guard that we've seen maybe in the last 30 years. So I think there's an argument for all four of these teams trying to figure out who's best. North Carolina had the best season. Duke probably had the most talent. NC State exceeded expectations that were set for them. And Wake Forest had the best player and a coach that we just weren't fortunate enough to see how things would have ended up if he stayed at Wake Forest longer. Skip Prosser tragically passing a few years later. It's hard to imagine it ever being as good again as it was 15 or 16 years ago. And I'm not saying that in the old guy way. Hey, things were always better back in my day. No, that's not what I'm doing here. It's more college basketball has changed so much. The one and done, it wasn't popular yet at that time. You had a couple of players leaving his sophomore, CP3 after his sophomore year. Marvin Williams, he left after his freshman season and the national title team. It's just hard to imagine it being the same when you have early expansion of the ACC in that point, partially expanded in 2005, then a 12-team league in 2006, and now it's ballooned to a 15-team conference, which I think hurts a smaller school like Wake Forest, and it also makes things a lot more difficult for the four teams to have in a singular year or singular stretch of two seasons as much quality talent than they did back then, or as they did back then. The games, they were just legendary. Going back with a little bit of help from Brian Ives at the ACC Network, North Carolina Wake had that three overtime game, which I didn't know this until last night, was Roy's first ACC game as Tar Heel coach. Three overtimes in the Smith Center. Wake Forest ending up winning that game. The last time North Carolina had a triple overtime game before that was 1982. So it was over 20 years before we saw a game like that to have reference for that. I don't think we talk about the 1957 North Carolina team enough, the one with Lenny Rosenbluth that went off. Robert, how's this for a crazy stat? In 1957, that incredible Tar Heel team in the Final Four won a triple overtime game, and then in the championship game won in triple overtime.
Wow.
Back-to-back years. What do you think we'd do today if a champion in the Final Four won back-to-back triple OT games?
We would be, I don't know. Chapel Hill would look a lot different.
It happened in 1957 with that team that won nearly 65 years ago. But it's not just North Carolina Duke, the point I'm trying to make here. North Carolina Wake had that legendary game. Wake Forest, Julius Hodge versus CP3. Chris Paul doing something unsavory to Jules by maybe hitting him in the Jules. Then, of course, there were those Duke Carolina games. Marvin Williams with the shot in 2005 sticking out from that stretch. So I think that's the greatest era of ACC Big Four basketball all time. And if you have thoughts on the subject, you can tweet us at SportsSubTriad. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. There was a headline earlier today regarding Luke Kuechly, who yesterday was officially put on the retired reserve list for the Panthers. The Panthers on their team site reported Kuechly is considering being a team scout. Now, this is a decision that's not up to Matt Rhule, it's up to Marty Herney, the general manager. But in catching up with Coach Rhule at a press conference earlier this morning, I asked him what he thought of Luke's future and the conversations he's had with him.
I've had a great relationship with Luke in the times that I've been around him. He's my neighbor, so that, you know, sometimes I'm out walking and he'll drive by on his, you know, way to go do something, I'll see him. But, you know, I think it's great if it works out, you know, if it's what he wants to do. I know as anytime a player gets done playing, they're trying to figure out, you know, what they want to do next. So if it works out where he, you know, he can be a pro scout, and obviously the pro side are the guys that are evaluating other NFL players. And they really are, their mission is twofold. You know, they're helping us build the roster by finding other guys that fit what we do. And they're also providing us advanced scouting each week on the opponent. And if there's someone that was built for that, it's probably Luke Kuechly with his, you know, preparation and work. So, you know, I certainly hope it works out.
Kuechly, he has a bright future in football in front of him. I know it's a question whether or not he's going to be a Hall of Famer just because he retired young, but I think if Patrick Willis is in that discussion, if other guys end up getting in who didn't play a long career like Gale Sayers, Barry Sanders comes to mind. Kuechly was the absolute best at his position in the time that he played in the NFL. And that is enough to think he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. But I think he could have a very good post-football career within the sport. I see him as a lot more than a scout, though. That might be where you start, but can't you see him in management at some point? Considering how brilliant he is and how many people like him, it reminds me of one of the best or one of the brightest defensive players I've ever had a chance to watch, who right now is no longer playing, but he actually is in a general manager spot, John Lynch. When John Lynch played, it was about the mental side of the game. He was very likable, and when he became a general manager, nobody really scoffed at it at all. It just made sense. I could see that being Kuechly in the next 10 years. But if it's not being a scout, he'd be outstanding on television. Mike Tirico is talking to Kuechly about this. He said that he is open to the idea. He loved engaging with John Gruden and with Jason Witten and Troy Aikman when they came in the pre-game meetings. That's for the broadcast team to get them ready to go and have them filled in on everything. He sees things before they happen. That's what he was really good at. When people think about what made Kuechly different, they talk about quarterbacks who see Kuechly on defense and he's calling out the play before they can get it out of their mouth. He recognizes it by formation. Does that sound like somebody you know on television? How about the guy who just got $17 million in Tony Romo? Now, I'm interested to see how his personality will translate onto TV, but in my interactions with Luke, when he wanted to be good, he was. Just like Greg Olsen, who was just a little bit more outgoing than Kuechly was when he was playing. But if it's not television, if it's not being a scout, he was already essentially a coach out on the field, so that could be an option too. I've called him the Peyton Manning of defense. In that his success didn't come from pure athletic ability. Peyton Manning didn't have the best arm. He didn't throw the prettiest spiral, but he was the best because he got everything done at the line of scrimmage. Terrific at game planning, terrific in preparation. He made his teammates better. Those are things that are not God-given. Those are things that you have to develop, that you have to work at. And Kuechly struck me as somebody who mastered all of those things. He wasn't the strongest linebacker. He wasn't the quickest. But often he was the smartest and the most well-prepared. Two terrific traits to have as a coach. So I don't think Kuechly, while he's not going to be on the field with Carolina anymore, not going to be on the field with anybody, I don't think he's going away from football because there's only so many fish you can catch while fly fishing. We'll talk a lot of NFL with Darren Gant when he joins us in a little over 15 minutes from ProFootballTalk.com. But coming up, a tough reality the NBA is going to face when it returns to play. This is The Drive. Well, here we go. B-Dot's in studio with us. This show hasn't gone the way I intended for it to go.
Good.
I never know what's going to happen when B-Dot gets in here. My Twitter mentions it's an absolute dumpster fire. It's a combination of people sending me Engine Atzer's name multiple times as a nickelback for ACC Big Four basketball. People saying I look like a Muppet, thanks to B-Dot.
That's a fact.
And now I'm getting video sent to me of Muppets involving Scooter the Muppet. And on top of that, I mean, we were reading lyrics to Ludacris songs last segment. So, I mean, I don't know where things are going to be by the time this radio show ends, but I'm off Thursday and Friday. So, might as well just steer all the way into the skid here, and we've got B-Dot's Grammar School. Grammar School, for those who don't know, it's B-Dot capitalizing on the fact that I have a blind spot when it comes to the urban vernacular, which has a lot to do with my lack of following at times on expressions and what's trending. I do follow pop culture, but that's a lot different than trying to pick up on terms that are being used. Robert's pretty good at this, so this isn't a black-white thing. This is just a Josh Graham thing, and we'll see how this goes. There are five words here that B-Dot's going to bring to me, or five expressions, and I'll see if how many I actually know in B-Dot's Grammar School.
Josh Graham has his own way of speaking.
In high school, he didn't play sports, but he did wear a helmet.
And just when you think it can't get any worse.
My English teacher wanted to flunk me in junior high.
Damn.
Thanks a lot. Next semester, I'll be 35.
Josh is going to attempt to learn B-Dot's vernacular.
I'm from the old school. I got a little street knowledge. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
It's time for B-Dot's Grammar School.
We've been at this since March 25th.
Wow. It does not seem like that long. Though.
It really doesn't. And the point is, again, for Josh to upgrade his vernacular as far as the urban diction is concerned. So we would like to ask you two review words, Josh, as well as give you three new words. Are you ready?
I am ready. I'm also just uncomfortable because I don't know where to put my feet. I'm worried about creasing my Jordans. You got me in my head. Yeah. All in my head.
Yeah. It's a nice place to be. 336-777-1600 if you would like to be a lifeline for Josh. And he might need it today because I see A is not here. Only person you have over there is Robbie. And you know that Robbie hates helping you.
He really does. So 777-1600. Please help.
First word. What's a flake? F-L-A-K-E. What is a flake?
I know what it isn't.
So don't talk about
not,
snow.
I know you're...
Thank you.
I was going to say, it's not my favorite Jack Johnson song. What? I don't think that's what you were looking for.
I don't even know who Jack Johnson is, Josh.
Not bad.
Robert, but if you look up Jack Johnson's flake, I think... How many seconds do you think it'll take for B-Dot to realize why he might not know what this song is? How many seconds?
One. The second you said it. I had no clue.
I'm pulling it up now. We have a...
All right. Let me get to...
Flake.
What I think a flake is. I have a good feeling about this. It's somebody you can't rely on. You set plans with somebody and they're going to flake out. They're going to flake. They're not going to show up. You can't trust them.
That is 100% correct.
Yeah.
A flake is just like you said, man. Someone who makes plans with you, promises to do things, never follow through. That's a flake.
Let's hear what Flake by Jack Johnson sounds like on the other end. Oh, this is such a good song.
What the hell are we doing right now? Will you cut that off? That isn't this.
Oh, wait. Just give it 5 more seconds.
Oh, my God.
God, you sound like me in college. hold on, baby. Give me 5 seconds.
Second word is a review word. Robbie's ridiculous. Gassed up.
Oh, no.
Gassed up. We discussed this word on April 15th. You got it wrong on April 15th. What does it mean to gas someone up?
I'm between two different meanings here.
Talk it out.
Gassed up. I think it means to fire somebody up. Not to be mad, but to hype somebody up is to gas somebody up. I'm all gassed up.
That is 100% correct, Josh.
Yeah!
He is actually retaining some of
this. He is retaining some of this.
I can't believe I got that one right.
That is correct. I really can't either. Your third word, Josh, and this is a new word. What is a tip drill? Now, listen. I was educated on this one, Robbie, because I thought I knew what a tip drill was.
I think I know what it means in sports, but I don't know what it means in urban vernacular.
What's scary is it means the same thing in the urban that it does in sports. Josh, what is a tip drill?
Okay. Is it like you, two people are going for the same girl and you end up taking her away from your friend or the person you're with? Is that a tip drill?
Absolutely not.
Oh.
Yeah.
I could see that happening.
I wish you all could have saw how excited he got when he heard me say absolutely, and then how I saw the life leave his body when I said not. Dig this. A tip drill is a menage with one female. Yeah. I had no clue.
Really?
I had no clue, because it's like it comes from when basketball players line up at the free throw line and tip it off the backboard consecutively, one after another. Tip drill. Your fourth word, Josh,
that's
a review
amazing
word.
I don't know how I'm going to work that into the tease.
me neither.
Your fourth word is snatched.
Oh.
Snatched.
Oh.
We just discussed snatched May 13th.
Oh.
What is snatched?
I can't even tell you who it was in reference to.
Really?
It was Adele. We were talking about how Adele looks snatched.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
This is tough. Snack or snatched?
S-N-A-T, C-H-E-D.
Like swipe or no swiping. Don't snatch my lunch.
It means somebody's hot, like attractive.
I'll give you that.
Give it to me.
I'll give you that, Josh. It definitely means it refers to good looks, fierceness. Girl, you look good. You look snatched. It looks like she's lost weight. Her body is all tight. She is snatched.
Are my Jordans snatched?
No, that is definitely not how you would use it. It would only be used towards a female, 100%.
Got it.
All right. Final word for you, Josh. Final word, and it is a new word. What is a pump fake? What is a pump fake?
Probably what Drew Brees wish he did on social media a short while ago. Maybe just do the pump fake rather than go in the full throw there because LeBron James had a couple words in response.
Yeah, rather than go the full Hail Mary, probably should have just pump faked it.
I still have a lifeline. I'm going to use Robert here. Pump fake, Robert. Help me out.
This is a perfect time for you to come to me because I am going to guess.
Woohoo!
I think a pump fake is
then
when
it's
you,
not a perfect time to go to you.
Yeah, yes, because no, he doesn't want to help you.
Yeah, I think a pump fake is, I'll actually help you because I want to get this right. I think a pump fake is when you make your intentions at one thing, but really it was never towards that at all. Your intentions were going at something else. You're trying to fake someone out.
Ah, I got you. I'm trying to think of a good example here.
Like, you have two really hot friends, and your friend's like, which one you want? And you're like, oh, I want this one. And he's like, nah, I want that one. But your intention the whole time was to go for the other girl.
Right.
And now I don't think that's correct after I say it out loud.
I don't know if I should be, like, telling secrets out of school.
You should.
But, like, I remember when I was a single guy that the play was, if you were going to approach a table of women going solo, talk to the person you're not interested in. Mm. So that way you might command her attention when you do decide to talk to her.
See, my case is I just bag the ugly one. That she be, no, nobody else would want me, and then that girl would be like, what's up? He was talking to me. And then,
yeah.
Josh, all right, I'm going to go with Robert's definition there. I'm going to take Robert's advice. It's when you do something that seems like you mean one thing, but your intentions are actually somewhere else.
Before I tell you if that's correct or not, I want to say that your attempt to bag chicks was super detrimental. Did that work a lot for you?
Pleading the fifth.
I asked that because, I'm sorry, Sarah Bradford. I asked that because why wouldn't, after you try to talk to one, the other chick that you want to talk to, she's just going to say, no, I saw you trying to talk to my friend, Josh.
Oh, no. It's the same group of friends, like same table.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Well, no. You're not like hitting on them. You're just talking to that one.
Oh.
And
oh, okay.
Yeah. Have you ever seen him
in the wild, though? Like in the prowl?
It's funny. Sarah Bradford actually wants to see this. It's like, I'm like, are you going to get mad? No, I'm not. I actually just want to see how it works.
She's going to get mad.
She's definitely going to get mad.
Josh is a great conversationalist.
Yeah.
He comes in and talks to them about regular stuff. And then I'm like, hey, yeah, Josh won an award. It's the only guy that can't wear short shorts for obvious reasons in Greenville. And I'll come in like that.
He's the perfect wingman.
Break the other ice. Yeah, because I'm not worried about me. I'm going to stumble into it.
Yeah.
I'd rather somebody else get it, and I'll be Chris Paul slinging it around.
Yeah, that's me. I'm the Chris Paul guy. I'm the assist. My boy said he's going to Ray Charles to the thing. Just blindly walk right into it. Josh, you are 100% incorrect.
Oh, well, Robert was, not me.
A pump fake is to deceive someone or to fool them. When someone says they'll do something or go somewhere, but they don't. It's actually in the same vein as flake.
Oh.
But you did very well today, Josh. You got flake. You didn't get tip drill. You didn't get pump fake. But you did get both of your review words, which means you got 3 out of 5, and you were successful today, Josh.
I know this is a really fun segment, and we try to have a lot of fun on this show. Yep. But BDOT, I just want to communicate how much I appreciate you for adding perspectives we possibly can't add ourselves
for sure
to this show. And I'm not just saying this. This is not me doing a pump fake.
Okay. I don't know if that was
in order to try and come up with a tease for the next segment.
Okay.
This is me being genuine and honest.
Okay. Even with the smile
Josh
on your face,
Josh would be
Scooter?
Very sad if you flaked out on us on a Wednesday.
There we go. Now, that's a fact. That's a fact. I don't think I'm going to be here next Wednesday, as a matter of fact. That was a pump fake. Look at Josh. I wish y'all could see Josh's face as he stares into oblivion to think of how to use tip drill in this team.
That's exactly what I'm thinking
we
about.
We gotta get Facebook Live in here or something. Cause like his facial, sometimes I'll just laugh looking at him.
Yeah.
A lot of people do, Rob.
Yeah. People were commenting on my strategy. Things what I used to do in the wild. I mean, I'm talking to women who are snatched. Let's just be honest.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
I mean, come on now.
There we go.
I mean, Robert, if me and you went out, you didn't have to gas me up.
Ooh,
correct. Just never had to do that.
Didn't have to do
and
it.
And I was always going to be there. Never would flake.
Never.
Never.
Never going to do that.
Never. I wouldn't try to lead you astray. I would not pump fake you by any means.
Mm.
What I'm instead going to do.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do for that last one?
Bring a girl back for the tip drill.
Do the radio equivalent of a tip drill. Which involves NBA basketball next.
We're now the opposite of the front of sports talk because we're back to it. Get it?
Well, that's not funny.
Back to the drive.
That's moronic.
With Josh Graham.
Drew Brees is about to apologize, isn't he?
I don't know, man. He seemed pretty okay with putting a statement out.
Saying that he would not be okay with somebody taking a knee during the national anthem because he still feels it's about patriotism, leading to LeBron James dunking on him proverbially with a long Twitter post, multiple Twitter posts. A lot of NFL players are going back and forth now talking about Colin. Let's party like it's 2016. Akeem Hicks. He said this to Jason Leisure. It's clear Colin lost his career because of kneeling because, quote, we signed Mike Glennon.
Truth.
Holy bleep, man. No love for QBU and NC State. And this isn't stopping. What a week it's been for Dabo Sweeney and Clemson, where Trevor Lawrence is front and center on the issue, saying exactly what everybody wanted somebody in of stature, somebody in a leadership position to say. He does that on Twitter 3 days ahead of his head coach. Dabo didn't go as far as people wanted. I think that's okay because I don't think it's in his heart to be an activist on this particular issue. But as he was announcing that, he made it known Justin Ross, his best wide receiver, now that T. Higgins is gone, isn't going to be a Clemson Tiger this year because he's hurt. With a congenital fusion, he's going to be out for the season. And if that wasn't enough for Clemson, we learned from a former player that an assistant coach a few years ago who's still in place as assistant head coach and tight ends coach use the N-word during practice. Now, he didn't specifically say it to a player. He was repeating an expression that this former Clemson defensive lineman said in practice, not justifying it, just telling you some of the details. And now Dabo is under fire. People were saying he's covering up racism. They're saying that Dabo needs to do better or he's going to lose a lot of recruits. On this particular issue, I think the assistant coach, Pearman is his name, deserves the scorn, not Dabo. Because Dabo, he tried to handle this behind closed doors. And who can really fault him for that? Like, this wasn't done in a very public way where nobody saw it. It's not like you're going to say to the public, hey, this coach that I spend every day going to battle with, spend more time with than all of my family, he made a mistake. You would and I would try to handle this behind closed doors. If your family member slips up, you're not making that known on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So please hold fair expectations for leaders of families, leaders of organizations, leaders of sports teams. Set expectations on them that you would also set on yourself. Dabo thought it was handled. And oh yeah, this player, Greenlee, he also put out on Twitter earlier today that he had no issue with it. It was addressed with him. He just thought that this assistant coach should have addressed the team afterwards. And yes, that is an issue. If the team was familiar that he used that word and he only addressed it with the player who was present when it happened, Perriman apologizing to Greenlee. That could be an issue because how exactly do current players on the roster feel about it? That's up to Dabo to figure out. I don't know if the players really want to hear Perriman apologizing for something he did 4 or 5 years ago, because we already saw the statement from him last night admitting that he did it. But I think Dabo has a responsibility to talk to his players and see how they feel about this guy remaining in place now that everything's out there and we know what's happened. We know what happened years ago. I expect Dabo is going to stand by his assistant coach because he had multiple apologies. The player was okay with those apologies and thought they were genuine. Dabo thought it was handled years ago, and as far as we know right now, which again, we didn't know anything about this yesterday, so I'm not going to assume that we know everything. But as far as we know right now, back in 2016 or 2017, till now, there were no repeat incidents or any reason to think that this coach wasn't capable of fulfilling his responsibilities and relating to the players. Clemson won a ton, and it seems Dabo trusts this guy enough to make him an assistant head coach. Here's where I'm conflicted, Robert. You should never say that word. Ever. Ever, ever. I believe that strongly. I don't think I've ever said the word, if I'm going to be completely honest. Not even like in grade school when you're just trying to be a rebel and do something that's stupid. Never should you say that word. But I also believe we should push against cancel culture. Because what is the right course of action here? If he wasn't intending it at the player, apologized for it profusely, to the point where the player himself was satisfied with it, understands exactly what he did wrong, didn't act in any hateful way, years after the fact, did not repeat this same action, like, is the right answer, anytime somebody slips up, hey, you're done forever? Or can we allow for people in public spaces to grow? To make mistakes and grow. It's the issue I always had when it came to the domestic abuse front, the NFL having issues with that for years. We talk about these guys, Joe Mixon, Greg Hardy, Josh Brown, and the solution that everybody comes up with, it's the easiest possible thing. Fire him. Get rid of him. Don't want to see this guy again. Okay, does that fix the issue? Or does it just make you feel good? Does it fix their relationship? Does it fix this person's life? Does it make them grow? Does it make us think? Absolutely not. So it's hard for me to be charged up that this guy's still on the roster. I don't think it's covering up anything like some have suggested. I think the assistant coach deserves the scorn, and I'm interested to see how he's going to react over the next couple days. It's not Dabo Swinney that I'm that concerned about here. On Twitter, it's SportsUpTried. If you want to chime in, 336-777. 1-600 is the phone number. The NBA is returning. And they're going to return with 22 teams. They're going to vote to make this official tomorrow, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. I said this yesterday. I still feel this way. I think the NBA is making a mistake with the 22 teams. I think they're appeasing under 500 teams. And for what? Why are we sympathetic to the Washington Wizards? Why are we appeasing the Phoenix Suns? Every single team that's being added past the 16 teams that would have made the postseason if the regular season was just cut at this point were under 500. None of them I felt deserved an opportunity to be tailored to. Unlike hockey, which had 24 teams in their proposal, we still have no idea when they're going to lace them up and play, or where they're going to play for that matter. None of these teams have a shot at winning the title. In the NHL, we've seen it. 8 seeds and 7 seeds going to the Stanley Cup. When the Carolina Hurricanes won in 2006, the Edmonton Oilers, who took them to 7 games, they were an 8 seed. Have we seen that in the NBA? Aside from the lockout shortened season in 1999? No. Nobody thinks any of these teams have a chance. Yet, we're still appeasing them? We're lengthening the field? I get Zion, he could draw ratings. You're not going to find a bigger Zion fan than me. We've made that known, I think. But the ratings he would draw, the interest he would create, they're counteracted by getting in football's way. Because the NFL, they have games on Sunday, Monday, and Thursday. High school football and college football will be on Friday night. College football owns the calendar on Saturday. In fact, I put out this poll that you could still vote on at Sports Hub Triad, at Josh Graham Radio. Simply asking, what is more important to you? College football in the early part of the year or the NBA Finals? It's still early on, a couple hundred votes, but 71% of people who voted on that poll overwhelmingly say it's college football season. College gains priority. Also, let's not forget about the risk that's being added here. You're adding six teams to the Disneyland Resort. Going to be staying in hotels. We see the lengths that they're going to try and separate these players from people. Robert, did you even see the part where workers at the hotels aren't allowed to go into their rooms? They're worried about traffic in there. It seems like the NBA is making sure there's legislation in there to protect the players from being caught with side pieces. I don't know how that's going to work at the Disney Resort.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah, there might be some interesting stories to come out of that. You're adding risk. With every extra body you put on that campus, we'll call it, that doesn't need to be there. Six extra teams, all of which are under 500? Oh, but we need to have regular season games so that way we have our legs underneath us. You don't want to have an unfair advantage for LeBron and the Lakers, right? I get that, but why not run things the way you do like the preseason? How about you play Eastern Conference teams against Western Conference teams in exhibitions? College basketball. Do what they do. They don't have preseason games. They have scrimmages that you never hear about. Why not do that since every single team's going to be in the same place? It wouldn't even be that hard. There's no logistics error, no logistics problem to even address. So I think the NBA is making a mistake with the 22. I'll watch it. I'll consume it all. But not if there's a big college football game on. Not if Monday Night Football is on. Not if it's Sunday Night Football. If you're getting in the way of my football, I think the NBA thinks they're big and mighty because they own the summer where their only competition is baseball. When you go up against the football, you're going to get humbled. I don't think people realize. College football. Like if you're talking about, let's say, Wake Forest playing in the Pinstripe Bowl, the ratings for that game, the Pinstripe Bowl game, who cares about the Pinstripe Bowl, really? It dwarfs Duke and North Carolina triple overtime. That's what we're talking about here. The lesser bowl games draw close to 4.0 ratings. The finals got an 8 last year and was only going up against baseball. What do you think they're going to draw when they go up against college football or the NFL? I think it could be a problem. I really do.
This is it. You ready?
All right, hold on.
All right, do it.
Do it, do it.
All right, listen up.
It's The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Robert, it's time for my top 10 list. It's my weekly top 10 list. And today is McLovin's birthday from Superbat. Not from the Dan Patrick Show. McLovin, who wanted to make it known he was 25 years old because his reasoning, how many 21-year-old kids do you think there are running around here? And named himself McLovin because there are a lot of people across the world who have just one name. read a book for once, Jonah Hill's character. He is today, according to his license, 39 years old. I'm getting old. So, 39 years old McLovin had me thinking, top 10 comedies with some wordplay involving athlete names and sports expression. So we'll just call this top 10 athlete comedies. Go ahead and hit the music. I don't feel like yelling today. Number 10. My number 10 athlete comedy. Do you have an issue with that, Robert?
When you scream, I like drop like three different things. I bring the music down. I bring you down. I bring the music up so it doesn't drown each other out. So I'm like sitting here ready for you to scream. It's okay. I'm cool with it.
Number 10. My number 10 comedy. Battle of the Blues Brothers.
Hey, I'm Ricky Bobby.
And I'm Cal Naughton Jr.
Urging you never to travel to Tijuana.
That's a great movie. Is that your favorite line from that movie?
Oh, no, not even close. Probably from the infomercials they cut. It's like the Jack Hawk 9000. The Big Red's a classic.
Number nine comedy. Ghostbuster Douglas.
They laughed at Louis Armstrong when he said he was going to go to the moon. Now he's up there laughing at them.
What movie was that?
Blades of Glory. How long is it since you've seen that? Probably John Heaters.
I've never seen it.
Never seen Blades of Glory?
No.
It is actually pretty underrated in my opinion. You get, not Tina Fey, her name slips me. The other SNL, Parks and Rec.
Oh, you're talking about Amy Poehler?
Yes, you get peak Amy Poehler. John Heater is throwing heaters. I love that movie.
Number eight. My number eight comedy. Hot Rod Brind'Amour.
You will not make this putt, you jackass.
Oh, yes. How could we forget about Happy Gilmore? Number seven. My number seven comedy. Oh, Brotherhood, Where Art Thou?
You're just nothing but a dumb bear, smack smack. Yep.
Can you check for me? For Oh, Brotherhood, Where Art Thou? What was the name of the actual band that clearly George
Soggy
Clooney...
Soggy Bottom Boys.
Oh, it was the Soggy Bottom Boys. Got it. Well, no, that was the name of their group in the movie, but I'm talking about the actual band. Clearly George Clooney was lip-singing because he's not a Soggy Bottoms folksy singer in real life. I love Clooney. I watched The Descendants this weekend for the first time. Really good performance from him there. I'm pro Clooney. I just don't think that was him singing, and I'm pretty sure there was a band that actually did the music for that movie. I just don't know who it was. See if you can find that.
Yeah,
number six, top 10 comedies, Caddyshack.
I gave it a ten.
Why is that one slipping me?
Because you've never seen Varsity Blues.
Oh, there you go. I have never seen that. That's why I didn't know it.
The song was written and published by a man named Dick Burnett, who was a partially blind fiddler in Kentucky. I cannot find the band, but it's, in everything I find, it's saying that it's the Soggy Bottom Boys, and the lead vocal is Dan Tominski.
Dan Tominski, got it. Okay, number five, top 10 comedies that did not help me at all. Four Weddingtons and a Wedding.
Oh,
and a funeral.
Mother's a terrible cook.
Let's edit that out in post and do that one more time,
yeah,
real quick.
Yeah, you got it.
It's okay. We're not live here, right?
Yeah, no.
Number five, Four Weddingtons and a Funeral.
Mother's a terrible cook.
You're a big Trasketball fan?
Nope, never seen it.
What?
Number four, top 10 comedies. Steph Brothers.
Oh.
The price is wrong, bitch.
I didn't have to beep it, but
I didn't think that was coming.
It was funnier.
I was disarmed by that. I'd venture to say this might be the best one I've ever done right
really?
Here. Number three, top 10 comedies. This might be the funniest one visually that I've ever done here. Number three, top 10 comedies. When Harry Met John Sally.
What a pansy.
I wouldn't say it's the best you've ever done.
Do you know who John Sally is?
Not even close. Is it a cowboy?
Oh, no. Search John Sally very quickly. Have you ever seen When Harry Met Sally?
Yes.
Okay. So when Harry meets John Sally...
Oh, he has no hair for the hair gel? Is that what you're
Oh, no. Thinking? He's just a really famous, likable person. John Sally's not who you picture. Anyway. Number two. Yeah. Top 10 comedies. Number two on the list. Roy Story.
Is that your sister out there in left field? Naked. She's naked. Shut up!
And number one on my list, top 10 comedies, Anchor Manning.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah, I hope you don't mind. I got up a little early, so I took the liberty of milking your cow for you.
We don't have a cow. We have a bull.
Have you ever seen Kingpin?
I have not.
Oh my gosh, dude. You have got to watch some of these C-plus sports movies.
I don't think I have to.
You get Bill Murray and, God, I'm terrible with names. Great actors.
Yeah.
Kingpin. Check it out. Kingpin, Trasket Ball.
How would you rate these movies in order among the ones that I need to see? Varsity Blues, you got the one with John Heder.
Blades of Glory?
Yeah.
I would say Blades of Glory 1, Varsity Blues 2, Kingpin 3, Trasket Ball 4.
Are you a big documentary fan?
I'm not so big into like the murder mystery stuff. I'm more about like...
So you're not very interested in the Jeffrey Epstein
I'm going to be completely special. Honest with you. I watched like 20 minutes of it and I was like, dude, there's so much other bad stuff going on that I don't even want to watch this right now.
For some reason, I thought it was a good idea to binge that.
Oh, God.
Last night.
How was that?
I was up till like 1 in the morning watching.
Sheesh.
Because somehow that was a pick-me-up from the news, which I think tells you everything you need to know.
For sure.
But, yeah, I watched that, and I actually started thinking, Robert, best sports documentaries ever. Last Dance just got finished, and I love documentaries. I've watched pretty much all the ones that people consider to be the greatest, and I finally got around to watching When We Were Kings, the Muhammad Ali George Foreman doc. You gave me the advice to just have a fake email. I just used my work email, and it worked out just fine to get a 7-day free trial.
There you go.
I don't know if that's wrong to do, but it's an actual email I have, so sue me.
You're using your email for a free trial. It's to see if you like their product. That's totally legal. Doing it 7 times is not legal.
Right. Not that guy. But I finally had a chance to watch it, and I think in terms of pure sports documentaries, that might be the best one I've seen. That, then soon after that, Hoop Dreams. But here's a question I have. OJ Made in America, sports doc?
I think so. I think you can classify it as that. The same way that...
I mean, the only place you can get it is ESPN+. It aired on ESPN. It was made by a guy who previously did sports docs in Ezra Edelman.
And it's following OJ. Like, who is a sports figure. Like, it's definitely a sports doc.
So much of it, though, had very little to do with sports.
You're right.
So it's a good question. If that counts, then that might be the answer. If it doesn't, then I'm probably going to go with When We Were Kings on Muhammad Ali. What's crazy is it still holds up. It still holds up so well. Like, if it was released today, re-released, it would still be tremendous. Now, some of the backdrops for the guests don't look great because time passes and our taste evolves over time too, but it still holds up from a filmmaking perspective. It's just really good. 30 for 30s. I really am partial to Winning Time. Reggie Miller, Spike Lee. That's one of my favorites in the last decade. The last 12 years, The U's really good on Miami football. But at the very top, I probably go When We Were Kings on Muhammad Ali. And there might be some recency bias in there as well. Wes Durham from the ACC Network, our good friend, is going to join the show next on The Drive.
Stand by as we continue our dig for the truth and the toy at the bottom of the cereal box.
Ugh.
got it.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
West Durham from the ACC Network is now in with us. And last night, regarding ACC basketball, I was both working on a project and I was sentimental as I was watching television. On the sentimental part of it, I found myself missing Maryland being in the league, watching Len Bias do his thing against the Tar Heels. And and Wes,
let me square you up on some things.
Okay.
Dan Tominski is in the Alison Krauss and Union Station band.
Thank you.
And it was that band that covered the Soggy Bottom Boys.
That's right. That was the voice we heard from
Dan
George
Tominski,
Clooney.
Yeah, Dan Tominski is he's the lead male singer in Alison Krauss's band.
That is very
And this is my one of my wife's three favorite movies. The second thing is, and I will contest Robert on this. I would watch Varsity Blues before I watch Kingpin.
Oh man, come on, Bill Murray
and
his heyday.
What was the other? But Trascabal or whatever that movie is.
That was at the last. That was fourth.
Yeah, you can't watch that.
But yeah, what was the one involving ice skating?
Blades of Glory.
Blades of Glory. It has moments. It's nowhere near as fun as Ricky Bobby.
It's bottom of the Will Ferrell movie tree.
While we're on this subject, let's go down the line. When We Were Kings. The
That's
Last
good.
Dance,
when
O.J.
We were
Made
Kings,
in America.
O.J. Made in America is more of it's a documentary, but it's more, Last Dance is not it's a docuseries.
Yes.
I mean, it's got a chance to win an award. I don't know if it'll win an Oscar. It may win an Emmy. Last Dance is really good. I think O.J. Made in America is better. I didn't think it would be. I thought Last Dance would be better, but there were parts of Last Dance that didn't touch O.J. Made in America. But, again, that was a compelling societal story as opposed to just a really good sports dynasty type thing.
Hey, Wes, do you know people at ESPN?
Some.
Okay, yeah. You know some people who sit in some high chairs? Can we figure this part out? Maryland, okay, so last night, they're not in the league anymore.
Right, you're watching the Len Bias thing.
Yeah,
night.
They're in the ACC Big Ten. There's the ACC Big Ten Challenge that ESPN has. And I'm just interested why Maryland's played just as many teams that have been a part of the ACC for less than 10 years than played founding members. Like, I looked at this last night. Someone hit me with this on Twitter because I was talking about how much I miss Maryland. They've played...
They've played Pitt, everybody but Duke and Carolina.
Pitt, Syracuse, Notre Dame.
They've not played Duke and Carolina.
They've only played Carolina. They have played Carolina.
Oh, they have. Okay.
They've played Virginia twice, but think about that.
They haven't played Duke at all.
They haven't played Duke, and I don't think that's going to happen. But why not Wake Forest? Why not NC State? Why not Clemson?
Because what happens is typically, as I understand it, and this is not any inside trader information, they tend to pair the schools based on where they finished.
Right.
So, therefore, you know, you tend to see the same matchups every year. Plus, they often also take into account Duke and Michigan State playing that champions deal at the front of the year.
Uh-huh.
So, Duke and Michigan State, if Duke were to play Kansas or Kentucky, then Michigan State being the fourth team then is eligible to play Duke in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Does that all make sense?
It makes sense what you're saying.
I would prefer to see them play the Virginias, the Clemsons.
It's a missed opportunity for television. It's a made for television event.
They try and do it by – and one year they played Virginia, right? They played Virginia.
They have played Virginia. They played Virginia twice.
They played Virginia a couple of years ago. Last year they played Notre Dame, as I recall. And that was a good one. Notre Dame and Maryland, back when Lefty coached Maryland, Notre Dame was a common opponent for Maryland. They played more often than not because of his friendship with Digger.
I'm looking at the standings from last year. Duke finished fourth in the league. Maryland finished second. So maybe we can try and get some matchups going there.
I
need it to happen. I got family in Maryland. I miss it.
Now we got some selfish reason.
There are selfish reasons. It's all selfish.
Yeah.
It's selfish. I want to watch it.
Let's just hope we have an ACC Big Ten Challenge that has fans there. How's that?
There you go. That's a good way to put it. Let's get to the project that I had last night. Wes is on Twitter at Wester. I'm shooting him a follow. And be sure to follow what him and Packer have been doing.
It's very quiet online. Right now, by the way. I would tell you that my Twitter is very quiet right now.
Yeah. So. How are things in Cartersville?
Good.
How's Clifford the cat?
Clifford, well, he's on walkabout right now. I haven't seen him since about lunchtime, so we're hoping he trots back in here shortly.
Could be back by dinner, hopefully.
Yeah, that would be the goal.
Okay. I posed this to you yesterday because I thought it was crazy. The few amount of times since the ACC or since the NCAA tournament expanded to 64 in 1985, where all four ACC Big Four schools made it to the NCAA tournament in the same year. It's happened three times. Our good friend Brian Ives has been on this project as well. 91, it happened. It happened back-to-back years in 2004, 2005. And when I started thinking about that time where you got two Hall of Fame coaches, maybe a third if he's allowed to keep going and Skip Prosser, maybe the best point guard we've seen in the last 30 years in basketball playing at Wake Forest. And of course, you had a national championship winner with the Tar Heels and a Final Four team with Duke. And, oh, yeah, NC State made it to the Sweet 16 with Julius Hodge one of those years as well. Am I wrong to suggest that that era of basketball might be the greatest we've seen in terms of the four schools in this state being relevant at the same point?
Oh, I think that you certainly can make the case that since the expansion of the tournament, yes. I think that's you can certainly do that. I still believe that there are years, and certainly I wasn't old enough or even born to recognize some of them, but I still think there are years when only one team went to the tournament that the league and North Carolina itself put four teams, you know, toward the front of the ACC standings, but only one team went, and that was the champion of the tournament. But, yeah, I think since the expansion of the tournament in the early 80s, there's no question you can certainly make a case for that. The beautiful thing about ACC basketball, and when you sent me that last night, I said zero or one, right? Because typically that's the answer. And I didn't know it off the top of my head and was just kind of thinking out loud before I responded to you. So zero or one is usually kind of where I go with it. It's like what I sent you back about top four seeds into the semifinals of the ACC tournament.
2003.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, too, is when you have the top four seeds, period, in the conference that end up being into the semifinals, that doesn't happen very much. I mean, that's only happened three times since 2000, 2002, 2008, and 2016. So when you said something about 2005, you know, the cynic or the argumentative or discussing point would be, okay, well, that was the first year of expansion in the ACC, and that was also the 05 tournament in Washington was the year that Paul missed the game because of the deal with Julius Hodge in Raleigh at the end of the regular season.
Yes.
So, you know, you get all sorts of different discussion points, and that's the beauty of ACC basketball that makes it unique because you can't have these discussions in other leagues. I mean, you might be able to have them in the old Big East, but, you know, you're not going to have Creighton Xavier conversations that go bubbling up now in New York like you are in the ACC. And that's kind of the beauty of our league, to be honest.
And also, you got to consider around that point, the one and done was just starting to be implemented in there. And
yeah, I mean, you had kids that came, like Kevin Garnett had gone straight from Farragut in Chicago out of Malden, South
Carolina.
Kobe Bryant had, but Marbury was a one-year guy. Carmelo had been a one-year guy, obviously, in 03. Bosch was a one-year guy in 03. 04, 05, you were starting to get, you know, the tail off of the one and done was starting to become a little bit more pronounced.
It's just hard for me to think we could ever get back to the point where all four are humming on all cylinders because it's just so hard to keep teams together. And the one and done obviously is a role in that, but we'll see what happens when that blows by the wayside in the next few years, it seems like.
Right.
And on top of that, the 15-team ACC, where I think it hurts schools like Wake Forest that the league expands to this point because Wake, like it or not, smaller school, it's tougher to get in as well. And if you're recruiting the same crop of talent in the league, it's just harder to build that thing up and keep it consistently going like it used to.
Josh, I think the other thing, too, if you listen to coaches closely, you can understand that their coaches whose number one objective is to get old. And it's hard to get old in college basketball. I mean, I think one of the things that – and I'll use Clemson as the example because I was talking about it with somebody the other day that, you know, when Amir Sims announced, the day before yesterday he was coming back.
Yeah.
At Clemson, I think that gives Clemson an opportunity to, quote-unquote, get old. And a couple of years ago, they were old, and they ended up in the tournament, right? You know, so I think getting old, and Tony Bennett will tell you that's the reason Virginia was successful a year ago, and part of the reason I think they were coming on at the end of this past year, too, and it's a lot of the reason everybody was kind of Cinderella-ing Notre Dame a little bit. And so, let's be honest, I think getting old for most schools is the key component. For Carolina, for Duke, for, you know, others, it may be just having a collection of three or four guys who, you know, gel pretty quickly and it ends up being successful for them in that particular year or the next. I think Roy Williams' team that won the title in Phoenix was a team that came together quickly. Remember who they lost, though, from the year before. They lost Bryce Johnson after that game and
Marcus Page.
Marcus Page from that game out in Houston, but yet they returned enough with Joel Berry and Isaiah Hicks and guys like that, Theo Pinson, they returned enough, though, to make significant contributions the next year. And I think that's the kind of team that if you're not going to be one and done and, you know, fire the gun that particular year, I think that the next year becomes about how old you can get.
Wes Durham from Packer and Durham with us here on Twitter again, at Wes Durham. I want to get to a couple more things while I got you here.
Sure, no problem.
College football is, it seems like it's going to be played this year. Bubba Cunningham was with us yesterday, and he's very optimistic about that. It's a big if, but assuming that does happen, the NBA, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, is scheduled to restart with some regular season games, 22 teams being involved, and they have a drop-dead finals end date on October the 12th.
Sure they do.
And I get the NBA, the finals, they're covered in a big way across the national landscape when there's no, aside from baseball, no competition against it in the middle of the summer. Mm-hmm. If it goes into NFL, which we all acknowledge is top of the totem pole, the most popular sport we have around, but college football as well, which owns a day of the calendar on Saturday and to a degree on Friday night, and high school football bleeds into that as well. Is the NBA, should the NBA be worried about the following that's going to exist going that far into football season, over a month?
No, because they're going to make their money. No, how's that for an answer?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to make their money, but what about those ratings? What about sponsors?
Well, but Josh, the big challenge is the big reward for fans, okay? The reward for fans is we've gone, 80 days essentially without sports, right?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe a little longer. Like a lot longer.
Yeah.
You're going to get it all back. Now, baseball, I can't speak to what's going on there, and I don't pretend to follow it either, okay? But it seems like they're having a hard time getting it figured out. Now, you're going to have – to what your point is, though, you're going to have a programming nightmare, right? Because you're going to have the NFL on Sundays. You're going to have college football. You're probably going to have NBA weekday games when you get to the postseason, because I'm not necessarily sure how convenient. And again, you'd have to talk to people who are on the front line of putting these games together and understanding how those games are going to come together and what the landscape's going to be like for fans and those type things. I mean, are we going to have games that get moved from hypothetically Thursday to Saturday? Okay. You're going to have games that were scheduled for Friday night that will now be played Saturday because of other circumstances. I mean, so the NBA may find itself where the finals are played like Tuesday and Thursday and Wednesday or whatever the case may be. And remember, they're all going to be in the same place. So it's not like the NBA has to travel and have the travel days built in and things like that, right?
Tuesday and Wednesday night is what they need to do.
Well, what you say this, what they need to do. Now, here's the other aspect about this, too. We still don't have a final regard for how hockey's going to play out. See, remember, we still don't have that story yet.
Don't know where it's going to be, don't know when it's going to be.
And don't know how it's going to be played, right? You don't know where they're going to start. Are they just going to go ahead and start with the playoffs? Are they going to try and...
The regular season's over. We know that. They said that last week. It's over.
their regular season's over, so they're going to start with the playoffs. So when does that mean they finish? You talk about the pecking order of sports in America.
Yeah.
You're going to have it all. And, by the way, you're going to throw the Triple Crown in there in September, too. Okay. And, oh, yeah. By the way, the Ryder Cup is scheduled for the third week in September.
Hopefully the World Series. Going to be happening in October.
Well, you're way out on baseball. You're a lot more optimistic than I am because I don't know what they're doing. But I think this is the kind of thing that you have to understand. This is a one-time, you know, just like we just went through some one-time things that were not as pleasant. Virtual graduations and high school kids losing their last few weeks of being a senior. And my daughter lost her spring semester at Florida State of her senior year before she graduated virtually. So, I mean, that was a once-in-a-lifetime thing caused by a pandemic, and that essentially is going to have the hard parts and then the good parts. The good parts are that people are going to be able to watch every sport every night of the week for about 80 days,
yeah,
90 days. I mean, it's going to come at you in waves, and the NBA is smart enough to then go ahead and say, well, we may play till October the 12th. We're going to have the draft and free agency kind of right behind that. And then we're going to play again on Christmas. They're going to start their new season on Christmas. And to me, that is exactly what the NBA should be doing anyway. I thought Steve Koonin, who's the president of the Hawks, came up with a great idea and hatched it at one of those league meetings prior to the pandemic. And my question would be now, what's college basketball going to do, Josh? What's college basketball going to do? Because college basketball – I mean, and I don't have any inside trader information on this, but I would find it hard to believe that people are going to get on planes and go all over the country and watch college basketball in some of these neutral site tournaments.
Hmm.
So does college basketball need to think about starting in December as opposed to early November?
May Madness?
No. Look, that part of it will take care of itself. But what I'm saying is you got to think about the number of games that they're playing.
Right. If they push it back, I mean, it's not like – The Final Four isn't in the month of April anyway. I mean, you could still have your conference tournaments and parts of the NCAA and still bill it as March Madness, have the brackets in anyway.
Well, now, and let me clarify here. I know the Masters is in November this fall, and the Masters will be in April next spring.
Yes.
Lord willing. And I would say this, somebody who always tells – I always have somebody say, well, they can't play the NCAA tournament when the Masters is going on. Oh, they can. It just won't be on CBS.
No,
the NCAA
will not.
Tournament will not be on CBS. Well, guess what this year the NCAA tournament was supposed to be on? Well, it's supposed to be on CBS. It's supposed to be on TBS.
It's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. So if that changes for 21, guess what? You can play college basketball on that channel.
Give me the latest on Packer and Durham.
Weekly show tomorrow night. Mac Brown, Vince Tyree, and NC State baseball coach Elliot Avent, 8 o'clock Eastern.
Can you tell Vince Tyree it's Appalachian State, not Appalachian? Could you please do that?
If we hadn't recorded it yesterday, I'd be happy to do
that. I wanted to pass that one along because it was funny. I heard from a Louisville fan who said I mispronounced his name at first, Vince Tyree. And then I said,
a lot of people thought it was Vince Tyree for a long time, and it's Vince Tyree was confirmed to us last summer.
Right, and the only reason I was talking about him was because he mispronounced Appalachian State. Anyway, a lot of fun.
You mispronounced his name, so you're doing well in Kentucky, aren't you?
I am the most beloved person in Kentucky. I am being compared.
Robert, I slid that in at the end, didn't I?
There is, I love it. Right now, there is still Lexington media in my mentions because – a guest who was here earlier compared me to a Muppet and took a picture of it, and apparently I have a striking resemblance to the Muppet.
Guest who was on your show?
That's right.
That's awesome.
I have a striking resemblance to the Muppet Scooter, apparently.
Your career goal, years and years ago, they used to hand out these honorary Kentucky colonels. I don't know that they do it anymore in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Your goal ought to be an honorary Kentucky colonel.
That's the plan.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, Wes, thanks for doing this, buddy.
It's good to hear your voice.
That is Wes Durham. He's on Twitter at Wes Durham. Weekly show coming up with Packer and Durham with Vince Tyree and Mac Brown. So be sure to keep an eye on that.